Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford, your storytelling co-host.
And I'm Stacy Olkowski,
your other co-host. Today is November 18th. It's a Monday. It's 12 noon, so you must be ready to listen to stories. And we're glad you are. We're going to be telling stories about owls, mostly, today, and we'll see. Well, there's other beings in these stories than owls, but we'll see how that develops. So how was your week, Stasz Dilkowski?
It was a wonderful week. I started out last Monday by falling.
and in love?
No. On cement. And the great thing about that is everything has been a lot better since.
So it was a good week.
Yes, I have had a good week. I luckily did have a fall walking across the street at the curb, and nothing serious happened. It was mostly I was damaging to my dignity.
That was lucky.
Yes, my dignity.
Where did that come from?
My wife says that sometimes. It was from her father.
Oh. I thought maybe it was a grandchild.
No. It was a family thing. Anyway, it was a good week. And it's a week I've been working very hard on storytelling to get prepared for what's coming up.
Are you going to tell us what's coming up?
Saturday, November 23rd at 2 p.m. at the Hagerstown Free Library, Washington County Free Library at Hagerstown. And it has a fancy name, which I don't remember.
Alice and somebody Fletcher.
There you go.
That is a very fancy name. Mr. Somebody.
Yeah. Libraries to me are like the library on Ann Street library in Sharpsburg.
Or the Red Brick Library.
There you go. Right? The one around the corner, something like that. Anyway. I'm excited about that because this will be the third celebration in this area.
Annual.
And it's annual. And also, on that very same day, there will be six of us telling stories.
Which is amazing. I love that you have a whole...
We have a whole group. And I believe I have at least two relatives coming from Baltimore.
I'm going to miss this. I'm very unhappy about that.
Also, I'm working hard because I have, in the next 4 weeks, I have three big things in storytelling.
That's exciting.
I'm going to be doing a house concert in 2 weeks.
In Frederick.
3 weeks in Frederick. Yeah, I forgot where it was. At Susan Gordon's house, which is, I'm really looking forward to, because I'll be doing Christmas stories.
Yes, and that I'm looking forward to, because I'm going to be there hear you.
And you've heard at least one of those stories.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Always
it's
good.
Okay. And also, then on December 14th, I'm going to be telling a story at the candlelight service at Tolson's Chapel.
And I'm looking forward to that as well.
I am. Do you have your ticket?
No, I do not.
You got to go online and get a ticket.
That's right, because it's such a small venue. It is a tiny little chapel.
And you need to make a reservation.
Okay.
All right. I was told that by my wife and by Mark Brew, who does a lot of things at Tolson's Chapel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's on the group of people. He's one of the persons who helps to take care of that place.
Yeah, it is a beautiful chapel. So, I love that. And the acoustics are wonderful right. for storytelling.
And if you go to that, you'll hear a story that you've heard a number of times from me.
Well, good.
I'll be telling my Sarah's doll.
Good.
So
that's for the season.
Yes, it'll be just right. And okay. I'm anxious to see what this is like because they have no heat and no electricity.
It'll warm up fast.
Yeah, if it's full of bodies.
Yeah, it will be full of bodies. Right. There's no doubt about that.
And the candles will be electric.
Yeah.
Or they'll be battery operated.
Yes. Okay. I do want to jump in and thank Andy Offutt-Irwin for his, our signature piece, his composition, Tarry Here, which opens our show. Andy's a singer-songwriter as well as an exquisite storyteller, and we appreciate his permission to use that as our opening most weeks.
Right.
Would you like to tell a story?
Okay. I'm ready, almost ready to go. I think we'll start with a story. I even have it has an interesting title. The title of this story is La Lechuza.
Oh, the owl or no? Never mind. I'll be quiet.
Okay. In the South Texas town of Pleasanton, there stands a lone wooden bridge. Folks that live there call it, often in hushed tones, the Black Bridge. They tell their sons and daughters they should never wander outside at night near the Black Bridge. If you do, the old ones say, the Lechuza may come. According to the stories, the Lechuza is an owl-like creature with the face of a shriveled old woman and the body of an enormous bird. That is really scary. She has wings where her arms should be and powerful claws on her feet. They are curled and covered with crusted dried blood. There once was a young girl named Marcella who lived with her abuela in a tiny house on the far side of the Black Bridge. They lived a simple life with no phone and no car, but the neighbors were kind and helped them when they needed it. They lived less than 100 yards from the bridge and had to cross it to get to town. As a child, Marcella would play on the bridge, sometimes swinging on the rails, sometimes sitting and letting her feet dangle over the edge as she watched the dark and oily water far below. Sometimes she stayed too long. "Marcella," her grandmother would call, "it's getting dark. You hurry home." One Sunday, her grandmother cooked her famous pork stew, and cousins and aunts and uncles by the dozens filled the backyard. As the evening settled, the children crowded into Marcella's room for short naps before their long walk home. They didn't sleep, of course, but listened to the stories through the open window. "If you're foolish enough to be out at night on the Black Bridge, the Lechuza will soar over the treetops and land behind you," said Tio Jorge. I think that should be pronounced Jorge.
Yes.
Thank you. "Then she'll laugh and curse. When you run, she'll chase you," said Cousin Berto. "Then you may feel the terror of her sharp claws and never live to tell a tale," said Jorge. "She'll rip your eyes out and tear your liver out," laughed Berto. "Silencio," said the grandmother. "You know the children are awake and listening." Though they laughed to think of scaring the children, there was no laughter later when they had to cross the Black Bridge. No one spoke as they hurried across the wooden planks. The adults walked near the edge to shield the children from falling, for the full moon looked alive on the oily water, shining and dancing. The children loved to stare at it. When everyone had gone, Grandmother came to Marcella's bedside. "You were listening through the window, Marcella?" "Yes. Was it true what they were saying about the Black Bridge, about the Lechuza?" "Oh, Marcella, you must be careful of the Black Bridge. Never go there at night. People have seen the Lechuza there. Sometimes in the early evening hours, She may look like she's just a big bird in the distance, instead of the wicked spirit she is. They say if you see her once, it could be accidental. Two times, it's very bad luck. But if you see the lechuza in the early evening hours, three times, it always means death. Be very careful. Your grandmother loves you. And I love you, said Marcella. Marcella's abuela was in poor health, and one night she became very ill. Marcella grew afraid and decided to go to the neighbors for help. Her grandmother warned her not to go out in the dark. No, Marcella, don't go out tonight. Remember the lechuza. Abuela, I'll be back soon, Marcella said. I will only go to the neighbors for help. You need the doctor. Marcella's grandmother pleaded with her, but she ran out the door and into the dark night. Soon she was at the nearest neighbor's house. The lights were out, and no one answered when she pounded on the door. She ran to the next house, but again, no one was home. Marcella walked to the center of the street. The neighborhood was dark and much too quiet. Then she remembered about the wedding in San Antonio, some 40 miles away. Everyone was gone to the wedding. They would not be back till the early morning hours. Marcella had to either return home without help or cross the Black Bridge and go into town. It took her only a moment to decide. She would cross the Black Bridge carefully, then run to her cousin's house to call the doctor. It was a very still and ominous South Texas night. Marcella listened for the sound of wings in the air. Hearing nothing, she walked on. With the bridge only a few feet in front of her, she heard a car. She saw headlights on the far side of the Black Bridge. Marcella's heart leapt, thinking it was one of her neighbors. When she saw the car weaving back and forth on the road, she knew it wasn't a neighbor at all. Marcella ran behind a tree and watched as the car stopped in the middle of the Black Bridge. Inside the car were two men. She drew in her breath and hoped they hadn't seen her. The driver stepped out, waving his arms and shouting, "Hey, lechuza, come get me. I'm not afraid of you. Hey, bird woman." He was taunting the lechuza. The man on the passenger side tried to silence the driver, pulling at his sleeve to get him back in the car. The driver broke away and ran, still calling and waving his arms. "Hey, lechuza, you're not real. If you're real, come fight me." The man turned to his friend. "See, there is no bird woman. It's only to scare the children." The whoosh of enormous wings filled the air. Marcella looked up and saw a giant shadow fly over the car and land at the edge of the bridge. In the headlights, she could see the hideous face and shining yellow eyes of a snarling old woman. Her nose curved down like the beak of a hawk, and deep scars covered her cheeks. From her shoulders grew wings, and beneath them hung powerful claws. They were covered with crusted, dried blood. The driver stood frozen for a second, then ran to his car. He yanked open the door, but the lechuza was upon him before he could climb inside. While his friend watched, slamming the door and cowering in fear, the lechuza clawed and pecked the man to pieces. When the man lay unmoving on the Black Bridge, the lechuza turned to the car. With her dripping claws outstretched, she flew to the car window. Though she covered her ears, Marcella heard the glass shatter and the shrieks of the man in the car. For long minutes, Marcella hid in the shadows, till once again she heard the whoosh of the lechuza's wings. Still terrified, she ran to her house. She locked the door and pulled the dresser in front of it. Then she went to her grandmother's bedside and told her everything. As she finished her story, Marcella became aware of a faint scratching sound on the roof of the house. "Oh, grandmother, I think it followed me." The scratching became louder. It was the lechuza on the roof of the house, trying to get in. Marcella helped her grandmother roll off the bed. Together they hid in the closet, closing the door behind them and piling blankets on top of themselves. When the scratching grew louder and more frantic, Marcella's grandmother prayed for protection. Over and over, Marcella saw an image in her mind. The terrifying bird woman scratching through the roof of the house, dragging her and her grandmother to the Black Bridge. When the scratching sound reached its most deafening level, it suddenly stopped. Marcella and her grandmother waited and listened. Finally, Marcella opened the door of the closet. She saw a pale ray of sunlight coming through a window. The Lechuza, a creature of darkness, had disappeared with sunrise. Marcella's neighbors, returning from the wedding in the wee hours of the morning, found the men on the bridge. The local police came to survey the scene. They decided not to publicize the details for fear of an area-wide panic. As for Marcella and her grandmother, they said nothing to investigating officers. The very next Sunday, Marcella's grandmother cooked her famous stew again. The chunks of pork were smothered in thick brown gravy. Family was gathered, as always, but something was different this time. Grandmother instructed the cousins to drag a ladder to the house and lean it against the roof. Then, one by one, she made the teasing, taunting men climb the roof to see the deep scars cut in the shingles. These cuts were made by the claws of the Lechuza as it tried to enter my house and get Marcella and myself. You must never again doubt that the Lechuza is real. You must never taunt her. You must never go near the Black Bridge after dark. Marcella and her grandmother never spoke to the police about what they knew. Now, if you go down to that old house near the Black Bridge and climb to the roof, you'll see those long, deep scratches. You might think it curious that there would be scratches where there are no trees close enough to touch the roof with its branches. If you do travel south of Pleasanton, and if you decide to cross the Black Bridge, don't go at night. You may meet the Lechuza, and you may not live to tell it.
Whoa! That is a scary story.
I'd like it.
I bet you do. told with the relish.
Yes. Oh, that's good. I like it.
Oh, I'm a little ambivalent about stories about witches, because I know a few. And,
you have to be careful about it.
Well, the witches I know are kind and...
They're the white witches? Is that okay to say that?
They don't call themselves... They call themselves Wicca.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but that is a... But obviously, in stories land, witches can be frightening characters.
Yes.
And that's a particularly good one. I do like that story.
Yes. I do, too. And I think you should always listen to your grandmother. If I had a grandmother, I would listen to her.
We might have to find you one.
A glance.
We might have to find you a grandma.
Oh, boy.
Then. So... Thank you for that story, Stosh. That was entertaining as well as spine tingling. Are you going to tell us about the Speak Story series?
It's over.
I know it's over, but there's still important things to say.
It was absolutely a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful finish to the series. And we had an almost packed house.
Yeah.
There were very few seats left available. Which is good because but Carolyn Rodas, who is a member of the
committee,
came up with a great idea, which we began doing I think we started in the end of July, maybe, going to the farmer's market. Actually, we did it for a couple of Sundays before a performance in July. And then we decided to do it on the Sunday, the very Sunday before the Tuesday when we had a storyteller performing. And August, September, October, and November, those 4 months together were the largest group of any 4 months as far as people attending Speak Story Series. And at the Farmer's Market. I always want to call it something else. At the Farmer's Market, there are lots of people there every Sunday, and we didn't sell many tickets each Sunday. However, just by those people walking by our table and seeing Dan Thomas's wonderful sandwich board that he made, a very professional job, which has the information about the upcoming storyteller. He also has this incredibly professional, professionally made storytelling flag that's about 8 feet tall, and it's long and thin from the top of this pole all the way down to the almost to the ground.
I haven't seen that yet.
And it's really beautiful. It was in front of the door last Tuesday.
I still missed it.
But it was dark, cold. Mm-hmm. And yeah. It was anyway. And we have lots of brochures we gave out, talked to a lot of people, and have fun with people. People say, "Oh, I don't live here." And some of the responses we've given are things like, "Well, did you drive here today?" "Yes." "Well, then you could drive here Tuesday." And most of the people respond with a smile or a chuckle. Some of them just look as if, "Who let these people out?" But it's fun. And I really believe that walking through, not only do we have a table set up, but I made a board about 2 feet by 4 feet, which I put some information on, a picture of the upcoming mm-hmm. performer and our logo. And I walked through the farmer's market from one end to the other.
Did you wear your robe?
No. No, I didn't want to confuse people and think... I didn't want to confuse people and think I was from a religious order, because some people right away want to walk away from you if you approach them.
And, weird person.
And we started saying, "This is not about God or religion or anything like that. We're talking about storytelling here." "Oh, okay." And believe it, a number of people just look at you real strange until you say, "Have you heard about the storytelling in town?" And then it's...
Well, Bill Harley was at his the pinnacle of his
just incredible.
He was really, really
great
funny
performance, and because we always take the performer to lunch, mm-hmm. you know, usually on the day of the performance, which comes at 7:30, and we had a great time at lunch. You know, he was swapping tales with everybody.
I bet he was. And, of course he was.
You know, so it was a wonderful finish to our season. And we have one thing coming up in January, which is an annual fundraiser.
Yeah.
January 12th.
Do we know who the teller is?
No, that's a secret.
Secret,
We will have a teller there for that. And it's a fundraiser. And we'll have more details as we get closer to that.
Do we have a date? Oh, we don't have a date yet.
Yeah, January 12th.
12th. Okay, I missed that. The first time you said it.
Yeah. Yes. January 12th.
Okay. I thought you were going to tell me some mathematical information about January 12th, but that's okay.
If you would like.
No.
All right.
Okay.
So I think now we should hear a story from our favorite storyteller.
Well, she's not my favorite storyteller, but she's willing to tell a story. Okay, I'm going to tell a story. And this is from the telling of Virginia Hamilton. Now, Virginia Hamilton is more of a writer than a storyteller, but her writing is so much like telling that I feel... fine calling her a storyteller. And Virginia died in 2002, I believe, was the year, and she's sorely missed because she just has some wonderful, wonderful story books, and many of her books are illustrated by incredible illustrators, and it's just a lot of fun to dig into Virginia Hamilton's work. Now, she calls this story a pourquoi story, which is, of course, Y in French, and that phrase is used to describe stories that explain how and why things came to be. She also mentions it as a cante fable or a chante fable in French, a transformation story. And this is from her book, Her Stories, African-American Folk Tales, Fairy Tales, and True Tales that focus on women. So it's rare for women to be a central character in a Pourquoi story, but here we go. And I should just say that Hamilton translated the original collected slave tale into more mainstream speech. So when it was her sources used Negro dialect for this story, and she's made it a much more readable, accessible story. I like this story because it's so unusual to have the owl suffer and behave with such bad manners. One day, far back in the day, in a low hollow among the hills, was a lonesome cabin set off by itself near the woods. In the cabin lived a whole hum and sigh of her youngers and her elders, even some very small her young'uns. They were all there talking and tittering back and forth, shaking and laughing, whether gray-haired or dark-haired. They all had on long black dresses, all looking the same, dresses all the same. They were kind to each other. Well, mostly they were kind and said nice things to each other. Friendly, mostly, like sisters to each other. Then in the afternoon, there came a knocking at the door. Those her elders, they knew that knocking had to be some poor stranger, bone-tired, bone-hungry, a traveler who needed help. One of the her youngers said softly into the ear of a her elder, stranger that is, thin as thin, so little weight to him from not eating. An elder whispered back behind her own hand, stranger floating on thin air, skinny and looking for a handout. And then she giggled, more of a snort than a giggle, but a laugh all the same, mean though it sounded. Those her youngers and her elders tittered and giggled, just pretending they never did hear that. Then gently, a little quieter than the first time, the knocking came again. The women never went near that door. They wouldn't let the young'uns near either. They just sat there around the fire, full of themselves, rocking and smoking their pipes. They told tells on each other and on their kinfolk, don't you know. They gossiped about all the people they didn't like and everyone else too. They even told tales on one another when someone had to leave the room for a minute or two. That Dory been putting on weight where she can't see. She can't see, but we sure enough can. And they'd giggle and shake till Dory came back in the room. There was another from the door. The women paid it no mind at all. They rocked in those old chairs. Creak, creak, creak. They didn't pause, didn't give it a thought, didn't wonder who was there, never peeked nor wondered. Then they heaved themselves up to cook their own supper. Some baked bread, some made the stew. Came from the door. They never paused. Just sat down at table and commenced to eatin'. They ate up all the stew. They ate up all the bread. Nothing left in that cabin but a bit of dried out dough on the breadboard. Came from the door, loud and noisy, just like that.
her elders stuck up their noses at that. Now, some of them might have been part deaf, but the her youngers had to hear all that knocking. It came again, loud enough to wake the dead. Nobody asked, "Who's there?" Nobody called out, "Who's hungry?" The elders leaned back in their same black dresses, relaxing in their old chairs, and said, "Who wants to cook for you?" And they laughed as they said it. And on the other side of the door, a voice said, "Please, give me a bit of bread." The knocking commenced again, and the women began to feel uneasy. But they were still bold enough to say, "We cook for ourselves, our own selves. No one here cook for you." And the door answered, angry loud it sounded. Those women started to shake with real fear this time. That feeling came up on them so fast, they heard again. And one of the her youngers, Benna, she had enough. Her hands flew up. Her arms waved. "That's enough. I can't stand another minute." She grabbed that itty-bitty piece of dried up dough. She patted it warm while the skillet heated. She dropped that dough in the hot skillet where it popped and sizzled. And all the women were shamed now, since all they left the stranger was that itty-bitty piece of dried dough. They moved around the room. They threw up their hands and waved their arms, blinking their eyes, looking over their shoulders and trying to see behind themselves. The dough in the skillet kept rising. The lid lifted right off the skillet. The dough grew hard on top and smelled terrible strong. The skillet got hotter and hotter. The bread kept swelling. Hard as it was, it split the skillet right in two. But the dough baked up so fast, it rolled round on the hearth. It rose higher and higher till it started up the chimney. It rolled across the floor, lifting higher and higher, just expanding and getting bigger and bigger. And now the women were terrible frightened. They jumped up on the chairs, holding their long skirts out of the way of the rising dough, with their arms akimbo, holding their skirts high, elbows way out and shoulders back. The bread climbed over the chairs. The women scrambled up on the backs of the chairs, moaning, "Oh, oh, oh, oh." All this time, the knocking, knocking, knocking is keeping on and on, quieter now. Those elder women were too afraid to look one another in the eye, so scared and shamed for being so selfish. They hopped up and down, waving their arms, making little sounds in their throats. They blinked their eyes and turned their heads first one way and then the other, and all the time the bread was rolling and rising higher and higher all around them. Now they seemed to hear voices coming from everywhere. "You do not give. You do not lend. You abuse your neighbor, misuse your friend. Hush up your gossip, quit that talk. No more will you have strength to walk." And just then, the women's legs became so weak they could barely stand. They blinked their eyes and felt so ashamed of themselves. They couldn't look at each other. They turned their heads around, almost clear around. They made that clucking sound in their throats. And from the other side of the door, they heard, "You wouldn't open the door to one so hungry and poor. Fly out a window, any you see. Go live out your days in a hollow tree." Now the bread had risen so high there were only chink openings left at the tops of the windows. The women pushed against each other trying to get to the windows, each afraid they'd be left behind. They pushed and pulled at the bread in the windows trying to get away. They struggled their way out the window chinks, and as they went, each of them turned into an owl. And each of these her younger owls and her elder owls flew into the woods till they found a hollow tree. And now, hiding in their hollow trees, each will stay an owl. They will stay till they forget all the bad things they know about their folks. Right now, they're still talking, still remembering all those bad things. They still say mean things about each other. You can hear them calling from hole to hole. Go home, Benna. Oh, why don't you all go home? You. An elder calls. You. Who. Go home. Go home yourself, Matty Lou. But not one of them owls can go home till they change their ways.
Oh. That was scary.
There's some mean women.
The scariest part for me, luckily I have a strong heart, was I sometimes like to listen with my eyes closed.
Oh.
And my eyes were closed and I was listening firmly, and the first knock on the door caused the pump to stutter a little bit.
Oh, my. I guess I need to give you warning.
Maybe in the future you could say, I'm going to make a noise. And in my story, there'll be something that might stop your heart. But that was a wonderful story. And I liked the sound effects. See, I can... it's easier to picture sometimes when I'm listening to a story.
With your eyes closed.
With my eyes closed, because there are lots of things in front of us that could distract.
Yes, there are. I listen to stories with my eyes closed a lot. And I always wonder if people in the audience, when I'm listening with my eyes closed, think I'm asleep. But I'm not. No, I'm listening with my eyes closed.
I think people do that.
Yeah.
I've noticed people in audience who have laughed while I'm telling a story, and then I notice that their eyes are closed when I've like softened the story where it's nothing funny and a transition or something mm-hmm. like that. I think it helps sometimes.
Yeah,
I,
people usually open their eyes if it's funny.
And you know, sometimes we tell stories in places where there are lots of distractions, and so it helps if you can not be distracted. Of course, then you don't know what the storyteller looks like. They may be using their body or their facial expressions to help the story. So you have to be careful.
Yeah, you have to have both.
Yeah.
Switch off.
Don't pull the shades down too soon.
Okay.
And make it dark before it has to be. So.
I think I want to talk about stories in the round.
I think that'd be a good idea.
Okay. Well, it's coming up on November 25th.
I know.
Mitch Capel will be with us from Southern Pines, North Carolina, that historic little town. And Mitch, I've been telling people everywhere, Mitch is one of the funniest two or three male storytellers in the country right now. And if you like funny, or if you like traditional, because he's also known as the interpreter, the national interpreter of Paul Laurence Dunbar's works. And he'll be doing both funny stuff. Well, and Paul Laurence Dunbar has some funny stuff too, but I'm not sure what he's going to do from Dunbar, but I know he's going to be funny, whatever he's doing. And I hope people come out. He's not that well known in this area. He has told at Jonesboro, and he and Timpanogos and lots and lots of Southern festivals because he's from that area. He was just at Noah Baum's venue, The Grapevine. Mm-hmm. I'm excited that he's coming.
I think it bodes well. On the 25th, and his name has two five-letter words, so...
So that's important?
I think so.
Okay.
When the numbers line up, it's perfect. You see, when you take his first name, Mitch, it's five letters. The second name, Capel, five letters. And you multiply 5 times 5, what do you get?
25.
And he's going to be performing on the 25th. So the numbers are lining up.
Okay, we'll make you sit in the back.
I always sit in the back.
I know. Okay, if you want more information about Stories in the Round, I should tell you, December 23rd, I will be telling stories for the final session of Season 6, and I hope I'm able to announce some of Season 7 by the time we get there. We're getting close. But if you want more information about this season or next season, or you just want to chat about the series or about Mitch Capel, you can call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638. You can also email me at... Stosh is laughing at me, and all I'm doing is giving phone numbers and my name. Okay, Fanitsky, Fanitsky, at hotmail.com.
So?
Okay, $10 in advance, $12 at the door. We're at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown, 13245 Sierra Foss Pike. Right now, we're broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, because this is the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org.
Would you give your phone number one more time?
301-730-1638. Are you going to call me, Stosh Sokowski?
No.
Okay.
I could, but...
It's in your phone.
I know,
my phone number's in your phone.
I just wanted to make sure.
Okay. I think we have... You have another story.
I do.
Do I have time to tell a really short one?
I'm sure you do.
Okay, I'm gonna be quick. This is... it's actually from... from Edward Lear. I just love Edward Lear. And at one time, when I was young, in my youth, I had this poem, this sort of, it's not a limerick, it's a poem. And I had it memorized, and I thought that I could do it from memory, but that I've been practicing, I don't know it that well anymore. Anyway, The Owl and the Pussycat. The owl and the pussycat went to sea in a beautiful pea-green boat. They took some honey and plenty of money wrapped up in a 5-pound note. The owl looked up to the stars above and sang to a small guitar. Oh, lovely pussy, oh, pussy, my love, what a beautiful pussy you are. You are, you are, what a beautiful pussy you are. Pussy said to the owl, you elegant fowl, how charmingly sweet you sing. Oh, let us be married, too long we have tarried. But what shall we do for a ring? They sailed away for a year and a day to the land where the bong tree grows. And there in a wood a piggy wig stood with a ring at the end of his nose. His nose, his nose, with a ring at the end of his nose. Dear pig, are you willing to sell for 1 shilling your ring? Said the piggy, I will. So they took it away and were married next day by the turkey who lives on the hill. They dined on mince and slices of quince, which they ate with a runcible spoon, and hand in hand on the edge of the sand, they danced by the light of the moon, the moon, the moon. They danced by the light of the moon.
That's wonderful. Do you know when that was written?
Well, I know that Edward Lear died in 1888, so it had to have been
before that.
And I did a little tiny bit of research on Edward Lear, but I've forgotten most of what I read. That I was shocked to learn that he was born in 1812, which is the same year as my great-great-grandfather. And... That makes him a contemporary. That's a long, long time ago. I had no idea that he had, you know, I thought, I knew he lived in the 1800s, but I thought he lived into the 20th century, and so I was shocked to learn that I was way off.
Not your grandfather.
No.
Yeah.
Well, no, Edward Lear. We're speaking of Edward Lear.
I know.
We could go on and on about Edward Lear. But I did also learn that he was an accomplished landscape artist and traveled all over Europe doing landscapes, but he's perhaps better known as an ornithological artist. He did etchings and sketches of birds. Yes.
Wow. Ornithological. Yeah.
He made his living at that. I mean, he was really one of the first ornithological artists to paint from life, to sketch and paint from life, live birds instead of just dead ones brought back from overseas.
He must have had some real good skills besides being an artist and writing.
Because,
well, to paint a picture of a bird from life means you have to get the bird to sit still. And that, you know, or else paint really fast.
Maybe he told them stories or recited limericks to them, and that might have caused them to stand at attention.
That might have worked.
Okay, you're going to tell us a story.
I will tell you a story, but in the meantime, I would like to tell you to do something, or ask you to do something. I never would tell you to do something, but ask you to do something. So I would like you to, you can do this quickly, I know.
Tell me the answer. Is it a math question?
It's a very simple
thing. My.
Just look at your phone number and add the numbers in your phone number. And don't have to do it right away. You can do it at any time. And then when you get finished with that, add the answer itself. You get the answer.
Add the answer to the phone number?
No, add the answer. Just get the answer and then add whatever the numbers are in the answer. And you'll have another portent, another great thing lining up. Anyway, here we go. And you can tell us later on if you do it. Long ago, in a small village near Eagle Pass, Texas, a young girl named Lucretia lived with her elderly mother. The girl was disrespectful to her mother and laughed at her old ways, even saying, "I wish I didn't have to live with you. My friends have younger parents."
Oh.
Yeah. Oh. I could think of something that the mother could have said, but she didn't. Her mother cried to see how unhappy her daughter was. She knew that no matter how beautiful or popular Lucretia was, nothing but evil could result from such cruel words. She decided to sponsor a party for her daughter and to invite all of Lucretia's friends, even her own brothers and sisters, Lucretia's aunts and uncles. This way, she could show her off to the family, for she was secretly very proud of Lucretia's schooling. Maybe this will make her happy. She can see how much her family cares for her, how proud we all are. She sat sipping her tea and resting for a moment before she began the evening meal. And as she cooked, she made her plans. She could help with a big wedding party in town and earn enough money to buy extra flour and sugar, maybe even butter for an icing on the cake. She could do extra washing and ironing for families she had worked for in the past and earn enough for decorations, crepe paper, and lanterns to hang from the rafter beams. Soon she realized she was singing, imagining parties she had attended as a girl Lucretia's age. "Yes," she said, "this will be a happy time for us all, myself included." Though her mother was poor, she was an excellent seamstress. So the next day, with Lucretia away at school, she found a box of old dresses of her own. By cutting a collar from one, buttons from another, and snipping the cloth to fit her daughter's tiny waistline, she made a beautiful dress. She thought, the sleeves could use some work. So she found some white ruffles and sewed them onto the sleeves. When she heard Lucretia coming up the path, she hid the dress. "Lucretia, I have a nice surprise." "Really?" said Lucretia. And what is your nice surprise? Are we finally leaving this dirty neighborhood? No, her mother said. I'll tell you later, after supper maybe. But she didn't tell her after supper. Instead, she cried herself to sleep, thinking how unhappy her daughter must be. But the morning sunrise came, and the pink was on the horizon, and she thought, it is a sign from God. I will tell her. Lucretia, I want to give a party for you and invite all your friends. A party? A party for me? Yes. And can we have a band? I hadn't thought of that. And what else have you not thought about? Said Lucretia, arising from the table and mocking her mother's sad look. But that afternoon, when Lucretia returned from school, she seemed eager for the party. On one condition. My girlfriends want to spend the night. We can have a sleepover party, and no one tells us when we go to bed. It will be a fine party, said her mother. You will see. A sleepover party. Of course, if that will make you happy. Lucretia's mother was soon exhausted from the extra work of earning money for the party. She asked her brothers and sisters to help her in the preparations. Ignacio, her youngest brother, was himself a man of 35. Ignacio, she said, would you consider staying for the night and helping with the girls? Of course, he said. I would be honored to chaperone the party of my niece. And so the plans were made. Lucretia and her friends made their plans. Her mother and her family made very different plans. Soon, the darkest Saturday in Lucretia's family history came to pass. If it's really a party for me, then I shouldn't have to help, Lucretia said. So she visited with her friends for most of the day. She returned home an hour before the party. Her aunts and uncles were busy hanging decorations and preparing snacks. And then, on a chair in her bedroom, Lucretia saw the dress her mother made. What is this? Oh, said her mother, beaming with joy and pride, it is your party dress. I made it. It seems like months ago. Try it on. We want to see it. You try it on, said Lucretia. It's more your style. She flung the dress on the table. The aunts left the room in a hurry, but soon Ignacio appeared at the kitchen door. What's the problem? He asked. No problem, said Lucretia, unless it is you. This is not your business. My sister's happiness is my business, said Ignacio, and you are correct. There is no problem. You will wear the dress. He picked it up and handed it to her. Lucretia stared into his eyes, a long stare of evil, but when he met her gaze, she took the dress, went to her room, shutting the door softly. Soon the guests began to arrive. Lucretia, your friends are here, mother called. I'll be out in a minute. Tell them I'm putting on a special costume. Her friends gathered in groups of twos and threes, filling their plates with cookies and sweets. Suddenly they began to laugh and point to Lucretia's door. There she stood, wearing the dress her mother had made. Sleeves were ripped away. The dress had been cut up one side. Lucretia was parting the cloth with her fingers, revealing a playful thigh. And when she turned around, the back of the dress was gone, cut down to her waist. Oh, my child, what are you doing? The aunts quickly pushed Lucretia through the door and into her room. Lucretia's screams of protest could be heard throughout the house. After only a few minutes, she came out again, this time wearing school clothes. I guess that they didn't approve of my new outfit, she said to her friends. The young people laughed and the party resumed, but Lucretia's aunts and uncles stiffened at the insult. They cast knowing looks among themselves and circled in support around their older sister. Lucretia's friends, helping themselves to another plate of cookies, walked over to the hostess, as they had learned to do, to thank her for the party. And while you're at it, said Lucretia, thank her for the music, for the band. I asked her for a band, but she said no. But Lucretia's voice had changed. She screeched her words. Her friends stared at her. Why are you looking at me that way? Said Lucretia. What's wrong with everyone? No one spoke. I'll get the cake, her mother said. Ignacio helped her from her chair, and she hobbled to the kitchen. The cake will make it better. Lucretia will like the cake, she said quietly. The aunts scurried around the room, turning out lanterns, blowing out candles. Ignacio held the door, and his sister stooped and, dragging her weary feet, entered the darkened room, carrying before her a cake. On the cake, in blue, was written, "To my daughter with love." For the young people, they clapped. But when their eyes adjusted to the candlelight, there was Lucretia, making fun of her mother's slow and painful walk, mocking her mother in a shameful way. "This will be enough," Ignacio ordered. "The party is over. You will all go home, every one of you. And you, you best pray for forgiveness for your part in what took place tonight. Now go." "You can't do that," Lucretia screamed. "This is not even your house." But most of the friends had already gone. Lucretia turned her back to them, and Ignacio promptly locked the room, her room, the door. "You are a shameful daughter," he said. At first, Lucretia's words could be understood, shouting and screaming in her room, and then she spat and babbled her curses, so only their evil could be ascertained. The aunts and uncles knelt in the kitchen, holding their sister tight. They cried, then prayed, and finally broke the mood by singing songs from their childhood. When silence had resumed its rightful nighttime perch, Ignacio rose to see. "Be careful," said the mother, "and don't hurt her. It is hard on her as well. Lucretia, are you there?" Hearing no sound, he unlocked the door and stuck his head inside. Perched upon the back of a chair sat an owl. Her yellow eyes glared at him. The walls were covered with specks of blood, and Lucretia's clothes were torn and scattered about the room. Before he could move a muscle, the owl flew at him and scratched his face, digging her claws deep into his flesh. But Ignacio's prayers were strong. He kept his sight. Covering his eyes with his hands, he stumbled to the front door and flung it open. "Go, go, go!" The owl flew out the door, her claws dripping with the blood and flesh of her enemy. Lucretia's mother moved in with Ignacio's family, though she died shortly after. The neighbors claimed Lucretia, in the form of an owl, returned to her room that very next day. Hoping it was so, the uncles gathered there one evening, burned the house to the ground. There were those who heard the flapping of wings and those who heard the screams of a girl. When the flames subsided and the ashes cooled, all agreed that Lucretia was gone.
Oh my gosh. What?
Any of you children really listening to the one. Show today?
Be kind to your mother.
Be kind to your mother.
Yikes. Okay, that was the last of our tales today. Thank you, Stasz Sulkowski.
You're welcome.
Closing out today's Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. This is Fanny Crawford.
And Stasz Sulkowski.
Your co-hosts for the Noontime Enlightened Radio Story Hour. Independent community radio in Bolivar, West Virginia. The Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand our own stories. Thanks for listening. Up next,
Jazz.
Jazz from John Case. Next week, we'll see you again.